Chapter 53. Martin enlarges his circle of acquaintance, increases his stock of wisdom, and has an excellent opportunity of comparing his own experiences with those of Lummy Ned of the Light Salisbury. As related by his friend Mr. William Simmons, it was characteristic of Martin that all this, while he had either forgotten Mark Tapley as completely as if there had been no such person in existence, or, if for a moment the figure of that gentleman rose before his mental vision, had dismissed it as something by no means of a pressing nature, which might be attended to by and by, and could wait his perfect leisure. But, being now in the streets again, it occurred to him as just coming within the bare limits of possibility, that Mr. Tapley might, in course of time, grow tired of waiting on the threshold of the rowdy journal office, so he intimated to his new friend, that if they could conveniently walk in that direction, he would be glad to get this piece of business off his mind. And speaking of business, apostrophe said Martin, may I ask, in order that I may not be behindhand with questions either, whether your occupation holds you to this city, or like myself, you are a visitor here.
A visitor, replied his friend. I was raised in the state of Massachusetts, and reside there still. My home is in a quiet country town. I am not often in these busy places, and my inclination to visit them does not increase with our better acquaintance, I assure you.
You have been abroad? Asked Martin. Oh yes.
And, like most people who travel, have become more than ever attached to your home and native country,
said Martin, eyeing him curiously.
To my home, yes, rejoined his friend. To my native country as my home, yes, also.
You imply some reservation, said Martin.
Well, returned his new friend, if you ask me whether I came back here with a greater relish for my country's faults, with a greater fondness for those who claim at the rate of so many dollars a day to be her friends, with a cooler indifference to the growth of principles among us in respect of public matters, and of private dealings between man and man, the advocacy of which, beyond the foul atmosphere of a criminal trial, would disgrace your own Old Bailey lawyers. Why, then I answer plainly, no.
Said Martin, in so exactly the same key as his friend's no, that it sounded like an echo.
If you ask me, his companion pursued, whether I came back here better satisfied with a state of things which broadly divides society into two classes, whereof one, the great mass, asserts a spurious independence, most miserably dependent for its mean existence on the disregard of humanizing conventionalities of manner and social custom, so that the coarser a man is, the more distinctly it shall appeal to his taste, while the other, disgusted with the low standard thus set up and made adaptable to everything, takes refuge among the graces and refinements it can bring to bear on private life, and leaves the public weal to such fortune as may betide it in the press and uproar of a general scramble. Then again I answer, no. And again Martin said, oh. In the same odd way as before, being anxious and disconcerted. Not so much, to say the truth, on public grounds, as with reference to the fading prospects of domestic architecture. In a word, resumed the other, I do not find, and cannot believe, and therefore will not allow, that we are a model of wisdom, and an example to the world, and the perfection of human reason, and a great deal more to the same purpose, which you may hear any hour in the day, simply because we began our political life with two inestimable advantages.
What were they?
Asked Martin. One, that our history commenced at so late a period, as to escape the ages of bloodshed and cruelty through which other nations have passed, and so had all the light of their probation, and none of its darkness. The other, that we have a vast territory, and not as yet too many people on it. These facts considered, we have done little enough, I think.
Education?
" suggested Martin, faintly.
"Pretty well on that head," " said the other, shrugging his shoulders. "Still no mighty matter to boast of. For old countries, and despotic countries too, have done as much, if not more, and made less noise about it. We shine out brightly in comparison with England, certainly. But hers is a very extreme case. You complimented me on my frankness, you know," " he added, laughing.
"Oh, I am not at all astonished at your speaking thus openly, when my country is in question," " returned Martin. "It is your plain speaking in reference to your own that surprises me. You will not find it a scarce quality here, I assure you, saving among the Colonel Divers, and Jefferson Bricks, and Major Pawkinses, though the best of us are something like the man in Goldsmith's comedy, who wouldn't suffer anybody but himself to abuse his master. Come, " he added, "let us talk of something else. You have come here on some design of improving your fortune, I dare say, and I should grieve to put you out of heart. I am some years older than you, besides, and may, on a few trivial points, advise you, perhaps." There was not the least curiosity or impertinence in the manner of this offer, which was open-hearted, unaffected, and good-natured. As it was next to impossible that he should not have his confidence awakened by a deportment so prepossessing and kind, Martin plainly stated what had brought him into those parts, and even made the very difficult avowal that he was poor. He did not say how poor, it must be admitted, rather throwing off the declaration with an air which might have implied that he had money enough for 6 months, instead of as many weeks. But poor he said he was, and grateful he said he would be, for any counsel that his friend would give him. It would not have been very difficult for anyone to see, but it was particularly easy for Martin, whose perceptions were sharpened by his circumstances, to discern that the stranger's face grew infinitely longer as the domestic architecture project was developed. Nor, although he made a great effort to be as encouraging as possible, could he prevent his head from shaking once involuntarily, as if it said in the vulgar tongue, upon its own account, "No go." But he spoke in a cheerful tone, and said that although there was no such opening as Martin wished in that city, he would make it matter of immediate consideration and inquiry where one was most likely to exist. And then he made Martin acquainted with his name, which was Bevan, and with his profession, which was physic, though he seldom or never practiced, and with other circumstances connected with himself and family, which fully occupied the time, until they reached the Rowdy Journal office. Mr. Tapley appeared to be taking his ease on the landing of the first floor, for sounds as of some gentleman established in that region whistling Rule Britannia with all his might and main, greeted their ears, before they reached the house. On ascending to the spot from whence this music proceeded, they found him recumbent in the midst of a fortification of luggage, apparently performing his national anthem for the gratification of a gray-haired black man, who sat on one of the outworks a portmanteau, staring intently at Mark, while Mark, with his head reclining on his hand, returned the compliment in a thoughtful manner, and whistled all the time. He seemed to have recently dined, for his knife, a cassabottle, and certain broken meats in a handkerchief, lay near at hand. He had employed a portion of his leisure in the decoration of the Rowdy Journal door, whereon his own initials now appeared in letters nearly half a foot long, together with the day of the month in smaller type, the whole surrounded by an ornamental border, and looking very fresh and bold. "I was amist afraid you was lost, sir," cried Mark, rising, and stopping the tune at that point, where Britons generally are supposed to declare when it is whistled that they never, 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 nothing gone wrong, "I hope, sir?" "No, Mark. Where's your friend?" "The mad woman, sir?"
said Mr. Tapley.
"Oh, she's all right, sir."
"Did she find her husband?"
"
"Yes, sir. Leastways she's found his remains," said Mark, correcting himself. "The man's not dead, I hope?"
"Not altogether dead, sir," returned Mark. "But he's had more fevers and a gas than is quite reconcilable with being alive. When she didn't see him a waiting for her, I thought she'd have died herself, I did."
"Was he not here then?"
"He wasn't here. There was a feeble old shadow come a creeping down at last, as much like his substance when she knowed him, as your shadow when it's drawn out to its very finest and longest by the sun, is like you. But it was his remains, there's no doubt about that. She took on with joy, poor thing, as much as if it had been all of him."
"Had he bought land?"
asked Mr. Bevan.
"Ah. He bought land," said Mark, shaking his head, "and paid for it too. Every sort of natural advantage was connected with it, the agent said. And there certainly was one, quite unlimited. No end to the water.
It's a thing he couldn't have done without, I suppose," observed Martin, peevishly.
"Certainly not, sir. There it was, anyway, all was turned on, and no water rate. Independent of three or four slimy old rivers close by, it varied on the farm from 4 to 6 foot deep in the dry season. He couldn't say how deep it was in the rainy time, for he never had anything long enough to sound it with."
"Is this true?"
asked Martin of his companion.
"Extremely probable," he answered. "Some Mississippi or Missouri lot, I dare say."
However, pursued Mark, "he came from I don't know where and all, down to New York here, to meet his wife and children, and they started off again in a steamboat this blessed afternoon, as happy to be along with each other, as if they were going to heaven. I should think they was, pretty straight, if I may judge from the poor man's looks."
"And may I ask," said Martin, glancing, but not with any displeasure, from Mark to the negro, "who this gentleman is? Another friend of yours?"
"Why, sir," returned Mark, taking him aside, and speaking confidentially in his ear, "he's a man of color, sir."
"Do you take me for a blind man?"
Asked Martin, somewhat impatiently, "that you think it necessary to tell me that, when his face is the blackest that ever was seen?"
"No, no. When I say a man of color," returned Mark, "I mean that he's been one of them as there's pictures of in the shops. A man and a brother, you know, sir," said Mr. Tapley, favoring his master with a significant indication of the figure, so often represented in tracts and cheap prints.
"A slave?"
cried Martin, in a whisper.
"Ah."
Said Mark in the same tone. "Nothing else. A slave. Why, when that there man was young, don't look at him, while I may telling it, he was shot in the leg, gashed in the arm, scored in his live limbs, like crimped fish, beaten out of shape, had his neck galled with an iron collar, and wore iron rings upon his wrists and ankles. The marks are on him to this day. When I was having my dinner just now, he stripped off his coat, and took away my appetite."
"Is this true?"
Asked Martin of his friend, who stood beside them.
"I have no reason to doubt it," he answered, shaking his head "it very often is."
"Bless you," said Mark, "I know it is, from hearing his whole story. That master died. So did his second master, from having his head cut open with a hatchet by another slave, who, when he'd done it, went and drowned himself. Then he got a better one. In years and years he saved up a little money, and bought his freedom, which he got pretty cheap at last, on account of his strength being nearly gone, and he being ill. Then he come here. And now he's a saving up to treat himself, afore he dies, to one small purchase it's nothing to speak of. Only his own daughter, that's all. Apostrophe cried Mr. Tapley, becoming excited. Liberty forever! Hurrah! Hail, Columbia! Apostrophe, hush! Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Martin, clapping his hand upon his mouth. And don't be an idiot. What is he doing here? Apostrophe, waiting to take our luggage off upon a truck, apostrophe said Mark. He'd have come for it by and by, but I engaged him for a very reasonable charge out of my own pocket, to sit along with me, and make me jolly, and I am jolly, and if I was rich enough to contract with him to wait upon me once a day, to be looked at, I'd never be anything else. Apostrophe, the fact may cause a solemn impeachment of Mark's veracity, but it must be admitted nevertheless, that there was that in his face and manner at the moment, which militated strongly against this emphatic declaration of his state of mind. Lord love you, sir, apostrophe he added, they're so fond of liberty in this part of the globe, that they buy her, and sell her, and carry her to market with them. They've such a passion for liberty, that they can't help taking liberties with her. That's what it's owing to. Apostrophe, very well, apostrophe said Martin, wishing to change the theme. Having come to that conclusion, Mark, perhaps you'll attend to me. The place to which the luggage is to go, is printed on this card. Mrs. Pawkins Boarding House. Apostrophe, Mrs. Pawkins Boarding House, apostrophe repeated Mark. Now, Cicero. Apostrophe, is that his name? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Martin, that's his name, sir, apostrophe rejoined Mark. And the negro grinning assent from under a leathern portmanteau, than which his own face was many shades deeper, hobbled downstairs with his portion of their worldly goods, Mark Tapley having already gone before with his share. Martin and his friend followed them to the door below, and were about to pursue their walk, when the latter stopped, and asked, with some hesitation, whether that young man was to be trusted? Mark, oh certainly. With anything. Apostrophe, you don't understand me, I think he had better go with us. He is. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.